Good morning, and welcome to the Prescott Daily Courier. This is your volunteer programmer, Babs Felix, in Green Valley. Here are today's headlines. Republican candidates for Yavapai County Superintendent stake their claims in Prescott. Change in Prescott code would allow enforcement of a range of parking violations. And code change proposals could affect Prescott's rules on RV camping at home construction sites and zoning violations. And here are your details. Republican candidates for Yavapai County Superintendent stake their claims in Prescott by Nancy Hudson. In a two-candidate Republican race for Yavapai County Superintendent, Prescott Unified School District Governing Board Member Kara Woods last week said in a forum that one of her goals in that role would be to fill vacancies on governing boards with candidates who favor a traditional academic-focused district. The 25-year math and science teacher and small local business owner completing a four-year term on the local district governing board as an avowed conservative is a primary race with recently retired Cottonwood Oak Creek Superintendent Steve King, a three-decade charter school founder and public school administrator and top district executive for the last 9 years. The two are seeking to fill a seat now held by Tim Carter, a five-decade educator and one-time president of the State Board of Education. At 18 years in the position, is the longest-serving Yavapai County superintendent. King, endorsed by Carter for the job, has repeatedly stated whoever is elected will be faced with the daunting task of filling his very big shoes. At the forum, hosted by the Prescott Educational Advisory Council at Mile High Middle School in Prescott, Woods said she is running for this position because she is concerned the county is lagging behind the state in academic achievement. About 50 people attended. This was the second candidate forum in the area. The third was hosted in Chino Valley on Monday, April the 22nd. Woods stated that she recognizes some of that reflects the poverty that exists in some communities. As county superintendent, however, she said she wants to advocate for a return to fundamental education that steers clear of in-school social and political trends and instead focuses on exceeding Arizona essential standards. She favors parents' rights to select the right placement for children, noting she does not believe that any one school can be all things to all children. Just because a child is poor doesn't mean that they can't learn, Woods said. Kings concurs that poverty doesn't mean children cannot excel, but from what he has witnessed in all the schools he has served over his career, trauma and chaos in children's daily lives must be addressed so that they can have a vision of success that comes from what they are able to learn in their classrooms. He emphasized that education is relational, and children need to feel safe, secure, and cared about before they will ever be able to read a sentence or compute a math problem. What King said he appreciates most about public schools is that they welcome any and all students. I believe in the promise of public schools, King declared. As for the superintendent's role of filling governing board vacancies, King said he hopes to build community pride in schools so that people run for those offices. In case of vacancies, King said he would seek to select those who embrace district ideals and will work well with fellow board members. He emphasized the county superintendent's role is not to supersede the will of individual districts. In her campaign literature and in other candidate forums, Woods has consistently stated that she favors parental rights to educate their children in places that best suit their needs and favors choice to do that. King also said he embraces choice as someone who operated charter schools. He, though, said that there needs to be accountability, and when it comes to public funding, more equity between charter and district operations. Asked about their intentions related to the ongoing operations of the existing Yavapai County Education Service Agency, King commended Carter for his vision in creating an agency that is clearly a model for others across the state and hopes to build upon that success. He emphasized his reputation for creating innovative and collaborative partnerships suited to the ever-evolving changes in education that can foster new learning opportunities for all children. Woods said she intends to do an inventory of programs to make certain that all are needed, as it is imperative to be transparent with public dollars and invest in ways that honor the taxpayers' wishes. Change in Prescott code would allow enforcement of a range of parking violations. In an effort to tighten up its vaguely written parking code, the city of Prescott is looking at changes that would allow citations for a number of violations, including backing into spaces in certain signed public parking lots. As part of an ongoing update of the city code, City Attorney Joseph Young presented several proposed changes to the City Council during a Tuesday, April 23rd study session. Young noted that the proposed changes were based on earlier suggestions from the City Council members, and this week's meeting was intended to generate direction from the Council. The change in the parking code was suggested because the city realized there were certain things we couldn't enforce or the code was vaguely written, Young said. Prescott Police Department Lieutenant Jason Small explained that the changes are intended to clarify the code, which has sections that are not specific enough. For instance, he said a section titled Obey Signs did not say you shall obey signs and therefore was difficult to enforce. The change would allow for enforcement of parking rules pertaining to issues such as vehicles that do not properly fit into spaces. We want to make sure people are parking within delineated lines, Small said. The code change is just basically clarifying things. It was vague before, and now it's making it more specific. In addition, he said the current code does not adequately address the city's rule that vehicles are not allowed to back into spaces in certain public parking lots, including behind the lot behind the Bashford Courts building in downtown Prescott. Small explained that signs were installed in the lot prohibiting back-in parking, but the code was not specific enough to address it. In response to questions from the council members about why back-in parking was not allowed in the lot, Small explained that the city uses an automatic system for parking enforcement that reads license plates and notes the parking times of the vehicles. because Arizona has license plates only on the rear of the vehicle, he said, the automatic reading system does not work with backed-in vehicles. For us to enforce timed parking, we need to be able to read a rear plate, he said. Small added that the city's parking enforcement was once conducted by having a parking attendant put a chalk mark on the tire of the cars, but he said the courts have ruled that we can no longer physically touch a vehicle to mark it to enforce timed parking. In order to enforce the two-hour parking limit, Small said, the city uses an auto chalk system. In response to a question from Councilman Eric Moore about whether the no back-in rule applied in all Prescott parking lots, Small said it is site-specific. The signage would be key, he said. We would have that sign saying, backing in not allowed. And in a related story, code change proposals could affect Prescott's rules on RV camping at home construction sites and zoning violations. By Cindy Barks. Proposed code revisions that could change the way the city of Prescott handles RV camping at home construction sites, as well as zoning violations and parking rules, got mixed reviews from the Prescott City Council this week. During their study session on Tuesday, April 23rd, the City Council members heard a report from City Attorney Joseph Young about four possible city code changes, which had earlier been suggested by council members. The council took no vote on Tuesday's study session, but members had a number of concerns and suggestions about the proposed changes. The revisions are tentatively scheduled to go back to the council for a possible vote on May 28th. Young explained that the proposed revisions were part of our attempts to update the city code, and he said rough drafts had been compiled for three of the four possible updates. This week's discussion was intended to solicit feedback from the council, Young said, adding, this is your code, so we're looking for your direction. The revision that elicited the most discussion involved a proposed change in the Prescott Land Development Code to allow for the use of recreational vehicles, RVs, for habitation on private property during construction of a home. Young explained that the council had approved an update to the city's camping ordinance recently, which, along with other aspects, had limited camping on private property. At the time, Young said that the council directed the legal department to look at the city code to perhaps open up the ability for owners to camp on their property in an RV while in the process of building a home. Currently, the code restricts camping to no more than 14 days on private property and no more than 5 times a year, Young said. He pointed out that the Land Development Code already allows for use of a recreational vehicle if an owner is rebuilding after a fire or other natural disaster. Councilwoman Kathy Rusing led off the council comments by voicing strong opposition to the change. I just can't support this, she said, noting that the change would open up RV camping to a number of problematic situations. What if they're living in their RV and they have a bunch of kids or grandkids running around the construction site? Rusing asked. We just can't go around to every construction site and quiz people as to what they're doing. It's going to be very hard to enforce. She added that problems could also arise over homes that take multiple years to complete, as well as the use of noisy generators that are running close to neighbors. Young said that the city council could deal with the concern over long-term camping on a construction site by limiting the allowed time to 9 months or a year. Other council members suggested that the city could also limit the RV camping to home lots of an acre or more to allow more space between the RVs and the neighbors. Questions also came up about whether the city's code change would affect HOA rules on the matter. Young responded that the city code would not override HOA rules, and he said that the city would include a reference that the city RV camping rules would apply where CCNRs would allow. Mayor Phil Good voiced doubts about the need for the change at all. "I see this as a solution in search of a problem," he said, questioning the frequency of RV camping on a home construction site, adding that the change would require more code enforcement and monitoring. Good said, "I just don't think we have the capacity to deal with the problems we have now." The council also considered a code revision that would give the city's new hearing officer authority to issue applicable sanctions or penalties in all cases, including those for zoning violations. Young explained that an earlier change by the council had allowed for the city hearing officer to expedite code enforcement proceedings. An officer has now been hired and is scheduled to begin conducting hearings on May 1, 2024. While the city's current code allows the hearing officer to issue sanctions, which are citations and fines, on the property maintenance code, it does not allow for such sanctions on zoning violations. As examples, Young said that the property maintenance violations might involve grass that's too long, while the zoning violations might involve a garage built too close to the property line. City Council appeared to support moving forward with the change on the hearing officer's authority, although Rusing suggested that the city include wording that would prohibit issuing permits or utility extensions to someone who is already in violation and on the hearing schedule. Another code change that appeared to get a mostly favorable review was the one that would limit heavy truck traffic on city roads. "That change is in the initial discussion phase," Young said, and council members asked that it be brought back at a future study session for further review. You are listening to Sun Sounds of Arizona in Flagstaff, bringing you the Prescott Daily Courier. And next, we'll turn to the features page, starting with To Your Good Health by Dr. Keith Roach. "Dear Dr. Roach, I am a 64-year-old male, and my A1C level has been averaging around 7.4% for a number of years. I was diagnosed diabetic at age 54. My doctor has been trying several combinations of drugs over the last couple of years to get my A1C below 7%. I am currently maxed out on 25 milligrams of Jardiance, 2,000 milligrams of Metformin ER, and 14 milligrams of Rybelsus. However, I have many side effects related to urinary issues associated with Jardiance, and I am quite miserable. My question is, with these three drugs, is there any way to tell which one is helping the most versus the least? If Jardiance is only helping 25% and the other two are helping 75%, then I would discontinue Jardiance and figure out another way to lower my A1C, or I would only take Metformin and Rybelsus and see what happens with my next A1C. Answer: in any given person, it can be hard to predict which medicine will be the most effective, so the general rules I give might not correlate with how your body might respond with or with what your doctor has found out. metformin, which works by reducing the amount of sugar that the liver makes, is the usual first-line medicine used for people with diabetes, and it is expected to lower the A1C by 1 to 2 percentage points. You are on the maximum dose. Jardiance, which works by forcing your body to excrete glucose through the kidney so bladder infections are possible. Increased urination is also very common. It is expected to lower the A1C by about 0.5 to 0.7 percentage points. However, it has been shown to reduce heart disease risk in people with known blockages in their hearts and also protects the kidneys in people with diabetic kidney disease. It helps with weight loss as well. Ribelsis also reduces heart disease risk and helps with weight loss. It can reduce the A1C by 0.5 to 2 percentage points, depending on the dose and whether it is given by mouth, Ribelsis, or injection, Ozempic. Based on the averages in the overall population with diabetes, Jardiance is likely to have the least effect on your A1C out of the three medicines that you are taking. My guess would be that 85% of your benefit is coming from Ribelsis and metformin. However, Jardiance could help your heart and kidneys more than expected based on the predicted A1C change. When you talk to your doctor, be sure to explain the urinary symptoms that are affecting your quality of life. I'm sure your doctor wants the best outcome for you in managing your diabetes and reducing your risk of heart and kidney problems. Although there are several other classes of medicines that you could try if you were to stop Jardiance, many people can reduce their overall need for medication by working on their diet and exercise. You can also benefit from taking a careful look at any other medicines you might be taking, some of which promote weight gain and higher sugar levels. A visit with a diabetes educator and a registered dietitian might make a bigger beneficial difference in your A1C than what you could lose by not taking Jardiance. Next, we'll turn to Dear Annie by Annie Lane. Dear Annie, I am a 45-year-old man, and I was married for 17 years to my lovely wife until her untimely death a year ago. My wife and I have three children, one of whom is from her previous relationship. I love her so much, and when she passed, I was heartbroken and severely depressed. Recently, an old girlfriend from my teenage years reached out and was a great friend to me. She helped me through my grief, helped me reconnect with God, and was always there for me. During this time, I developed romantic feelings toward her and she to me. I want to ask her to marry me, but my question is there a time limit on moving on? Should I mourn my wife because I do not want to disrespect her? My children and stepchildren won't talk to me also and treat me like a pariah. Any help will be great. Thank you. Signed, Widowed Husband. Dear Widowed Husband, the pain of losing a spouse is profound and navigating grief is a deeply personal process. The fact that you're considering love again is a testament to your capacity for love and a sign of healing. The reaction of your children and stepchild, however, is an important consideration. Their behavior suggests they may be struggling with their own grief and possibly feeling like moving on could be a betrayal of their mother's memory. It's important to approach this situation with empathy, patience, and open communication. It might be beneficial to seek family counseling. There is no universal timeline for mourning or for when it's appropriate to find new love. And marrying again doesn't mean you disrespect your wife. If this relationship feels right, it's okay to embrace it. Just make sure that you're moving forward with sensitivity to your own feelings, those of your children, and the memory of your wife. Consider speaking with a counselor or spiritual advisor to help you through these complex emotions. How a Sedentary Behavior Expert Finds Time to Move, by Michael Mershall, the American Heart Association News. Dr. Deborah Rome Young's work might move you, or at least make you think about moving a bit. As Director of Behavioral Research in the Kaiser Permanente Southern California Department of Research and Evaluation in Pasadena, Young's extensive body of work includes many studies about the healthy effects of physical activities and the problems that come with inactivity. Sedentary behavior is formally defined as low energy expenditure while sitting, reclining, or lying down. You're probably familiar with it. Adults in the U.S. spend an average of 6 to 8 hours a day sitting. The American AHA advisory pointed out, which is not good, Young said. Evidence is growing that sedentary time is associated with higher risk of developing and dying from cardiovascular disease, a higher risk of type 2 diabetes, and more. What's your advice to anyone seeking to find a healthier balance in their own lives? She says, first, take stock of how much of the day is being spent sedentary. It's become so ubiquitous in our daily lives that we may not even realize how much time is spent sitting. Then, figure out what works to try to take breaks or increase physical activity. The best advice is to find some time to be active. You have been listening to the Prescott Daily Courier, coming to you from Sun Sounds of Arizona in Flagstaff. This is your volunteer programmer, Babs Felix in Green Valley. Thank you so much for listening today, and I hope that you have a wonderful rest of your day. And now, stay tuned for more programming coming to you from Sun Sounds of Arizona.